Italy, compared to the same time last year, 44% more crossings are being attempted. Let's take a look at the Eastern Mediterranean route, and that's the route that takes migrants from Turkey to Greece, twice as many crossings as previously, and that is last year. At the moment, we have numbers of about 1,000 people either missing or dead attempting to make those crossings. And we are asking, why are these migrant crossings still happening? Why are people still dying at sea? That is our conversation today. We start with the International Organization for Migration. Here's Federico Soda.
Situation in the Central Mediterranean continues to be very difficult. We have a higher number of deaths this year and continue to have very poor conditions in the detention centers, where human rights violations are commonplace. We don't consider Libya to be a safe port, and therefore safe disembarkment locations need to be established with comprehensive search and rescue operation and a responsibility sharing of this humanitarian crisis in the Central Mediterranean.
Our guests today have all got experience when it comes to migrant crossings across the Mediterranean. Molly, welcome. Nicholas, good to have you. Alessandro, welcome. Lovely to have your expertise on today's show. Molly, please introduce yourself to our global audience.
Hi, my name is Molly Blackall. I'm a reporter at the I newspaper based in London.
Good to have you. Nicholas, welcome to the stream. Please introduce yourself.
Yes, thank you, Femi. My name is Nicholas Papakrisostomou, and I am the head of mission of the Médecins Sans Frontières, the Doctors Without Borders in Greece. And of course, we work with the migration issue in the country.
And Alessandro, welcome to the program. So good to have your expertise here. Will you introduce yourself and tell us, where are you sitting right now?
Yes, my name is Alessandro Porro. Hello, I'm a rescuer and I'm on board the Ocean Viking, which is a rescue vessel in the south of Italy, in Sicily.
Oh, it's so good to have you. Thank you so much for interrupting your mission to join us today. If you would like to talk to any of our guests, you want to know more about migrant crossings across the Mediterranean that are happening right now, join us. Put your comments, your questions right here on YouTube. Molly, you have been reporting for almost a month now and watching sea rescues happening. When people are being rescued, when they talk to you on board the rescue ship, what are they telling you? What are their stories?
Mm-hmm. I think the stories, I was shocked by how similar they are, actually, how many patterns you see throughout the stories and also by the length of the journeys that people are making. I think there's a sort of misconception often in Europe about how long these journeys take. And in reality, most people that I was interviewing on board the Ocean Viking when I was there had set off in 2019 or 2020 from their home country and had actually been traveling all that time. So that stretch of crossing the Mediterranean is actually the last stage, really, of what is a really very long journey. And at each stage, they face huge risks and huge challenges as they cross up through Africa towards Libya and then within Libya itself. So many people were telling me and showing me marks, actually, of torture and beatings that they'd experienced on the journey at the hands, they say, of Libyan guards. And also sort of people sharing experiences of things that happened along the route. So many women are believed to be raped along the route. It really is an extremely treacherous journey from start to finish. And so many people shared very similar accounts of what happens at each stage of that experience.
Nicholas, it's a shorter route for migrants trying to get from Turkey to Greece. Does that mean that they turn up in a good state, a good mental state, or is it still a traumatic journey?
It is a shorter route, and it having been on a vessel myself in 2016, I can compare with the Central Med, and I relate to what Molly has been saying. So no, it's not the same journey, right? But this does not by any means mean that these people that end up in the shore on the shores of the Greek islands, for example, the island of Samos, where MSF is active, are in a good state of mind or even a physical a good state. And what we have been seeing is the effect of the mental health burden that these people carry alongside when they arrive. And then, of course, we come into the violent border practices that the authorities employ once they are on land. So it's interesting to see that these people come and the first thing they have in mind is to hide themselves for days in a row in order to not get caught and in order to not be forcibly returned to the coast of Turkey where they sailed from.
Nicholas, I remember, certainly on Al Jazeera and many news networks around the world in 2015, the coverage of how many people were trying to get to Europe. It was an international crisis. It was definitely a European crisis. We're not at 2015 levels, but why are more people now making a journey when I believe the statistics are over 2 million people have made that journey over those 8 years? But why are more people risking their lives to do the same thing?
I mean, just because we think that we can regulate or control the migration routes, this is not the reality of the people that are actually traversing them. We will never stop people from seeking out safety, from seeking out security, and we might never even understand their particular reasons, right? We think that it has to be war. It doesn't have to be just war. It could very well be that in countries where the regimes are quite authoritarian, a family may be facing risks themselves, individual risks that make them leave, that simply make them leave. Rape or sexual harassment can be a reason for someone to undertake the journey, as difficult as it may come and as long as it may be. And this is why we're seeing people arriving on the coasts of Europe or crossing the borders, because they feel that this is the right thing to do for their families, for the people who stay behind. And we will not reverse that, Femi. It's not as easy as blocking a route.
Alessandro, what have you seen that you will never forget? What rescues have you seen?
We have been, unfortunately, through several shipwrecks, quite big and impressive. In my mind, always remain last May, when we arrived, unfortunately, too late on a scene where we have been completely alone without any kind of coordination from European authorities. And we found the remaining of a shipwreck with 130 people drowned. They were on a rubber boat, which was completely broken by the very rough state of the sea. And we were actually really navigating, sailing through bodies which were emerging from the water.
So where,
yeah, Sorry, Femi, I was just going to say that for me, actually, because I was on board the Ocean Viking as well, and I think one of the things that I actually found the most sort of memorable, I guess, was actually the hopefulness and the optimism and the joy that people were still experiencing even after going through these journeys. I don't know if this is something you found as well, Alessandro, but you know, the sheer sort of happiness and optimism and determination to get a better life that people have, despite having taken journeys which have often lasted, you know, for several years and been really quite horrific. And it was actually those moments of joy, I think, that stuck with me in terms of, you know, children carrying on playing and just being children, you know, in the face of this huge, huge adversity.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And when people spend a few days in a ship, which is still a temporary place, but it's a safe place, they just come back to be human again. And all these labels, migrant, shipwreck people that we can put on them, they just fade, because just they reveal to be human beings like me, like you, enjoying the life. Sometimes I've been being scared by the sea, but it's absolutely true what you say, and probably you face the explosion of joy, really, especially in the last day when finally there is the assignation of a port of safety from the authorities.
So, Molly, I'm going to...
Alessandro.
Nicholas, go ahead.
Sorry, please. Sorry, Femi. No. For me, it's interesting because I have been on the boats and I relate very much to the experience of both of them. And it's very easy to see how people forget, right? You pick them up from the boats, you pick them up from the sea in the middle of nowhere, and then 48 hours later, these people just simply... It's as if they've forgotten where they have been and of the imminent dangers. for me, it was amazing to see that on Samos these days, on the island of Samos, one of the border islands in Greece, right? It's the same thing. So these people come, they come on land. The first thing they tell us as Doctors Without Borders, as MSF, is please let no one send us back where we came from. So that's their first concern. 2 days later, if they manage to enter the actual camp, the closed access center, and although they are locked up in some ways, right, it's a closed center, it doesn't really allow for freedom of movement. Once they see us during our mobile clinics a few days later, it's as if they're greeting old friends again. It's as if they are forgetting that although they have landed on the island and they will be restricted until their lengthy asylum process goes through, et cetera, they still feel that they are amongst people that they know just because they've seen us upon arrival. It's an incredible feeling of how people are transformed.
I'm going to show our audience, Nicola, some of Molly's reporting. So have a look here on Twitter. Molly's been documenting what she's been seeing, what she's been doing, her reporting. She witnessed three rescues firsthand as hundreds of people were pulled from dangerous boats in the central Mediterranean. Molly, there was one part, and I've been watching all of your work over the last few days, there was one part where a family member obviously recognised another family member, and they were on the ship and they hugged, and it was so wonderful and so joyful and so happy. There were little kids. There was a baby being rescued. Yeah. It was all of humanity, a little slice of humanity, and they looked so relieved to be safe.
Yeah, there. It's quite a bizarre experience. I'm not sure if the others will agree, but you almost see like the highs and the lows of humanity in terms of what people experience. You know, it's moments of sheer terror where they really think that they're going to die. And that's, you know, a reasonable thing to assume. And then when they get on the boat and you get those moments of sort of family reunification and things, it's like the utmost joy that you can experience. And it's a very strange sort of shift between two extremely sort of extreme sets of emotions. So, yeah, there was a moment where one of the rescue boats was being disembarked. So what happens is smaller rescue boats go out to the boat in distress, sure. Put people on board and bring them back to the ship. And as they got back onto the ship, there was a man who got on board, and clearly the women who had already been rescued recognised him, and he picked up a child. And
I saw that video. It was so beautiful. I was like, yes!
Yeah. All right, remarkable.
So we have so many questions for you guests. Hopefully you can try and answer them. We're going to do very brief answers, though. Ricardo wants to know, Nicholas, what do you mean when the migrants arrive on the shores of the Greek island? Aren't they then safe? Nicholas.
Yeah. I mean, the question is a good one. I mean, you would think they would be, right? You would think that this is the end of a very long journey. Well, it isn't. Our friend Ricardo has to understand that even on land, these people are in danger. And what do I mean by that? They would hide because if found by the authorities, by the border authorities, by the whoever is responsible for guarding the border, they would often be summoned, assembled, and sent back to the water. They would be left adrift in boats without motors until the currents lead them to where they came back from. I mean, you have to understand that the distances are small here, but the uncertainty, and according to some of our testimonies that are very, very touching,
sure.
People say, you know, you get to step on land, you feel that you're in Europe, you actually enter the bush of Europe, and then they just grab you, and they violently treat you in ways that you wouldn't imagine, including forced genital examinations, beatings, and whatnot. And then they put you back on a boat, and then you're back to square one after you've tried so much. So, no, I'm afraid that the people are not always safe.
All right, let me share this.
Just because they stepped on Europe.
Yeah, thank you, Nicholas, for explaining the reality of that situation. Alessandro, Pedram is watching us right now. He asks on YouTube, the migrants are very lucky that they're able to cross into Italy. Italians are kind mostly. We need to have a worldwide agency to detect stress ahead and correct it in their homeland. So fixing the problems where they're coming from rather than to solve the problems when they already arrive in Italy. I think that Italy's attitude towards migrants has changed over 8 years, Alessandro. What do you think?
Well, you are absolutely right, but it's not only Italian attitude has changed, but I would say the entire European attitude. And I can witness and say what I see in the Mediterranean, in the route where we operate and work. I would say that in the last 5 years, which are the times I spent at sea, we have seen a huge lack of coordination for the organization involved in rescue at sea. A huge problem of not sharing of information from authorities to the person who are really on the front line. We have seen that the coastal state, unfortunately, they withdraw from their role to render assistance and they basically move their boats very close to the shore. We have seen a huge criminalization of the actors of rescue at sea, with huge consequences in the increase of the danger for the one who are trying to cross. We have seen that the topic of rescue at sea, which is very well regulated by international law, is turning somehow into a migration issue. Like somehow those things are seen by authorities as two different phenomena. And then we have seen a change in the public opinion, which is, has become very, very polarized and sometimes also in a violent way.
I'm just going to bring in a politician who is well known in Italy for his, let's say, firm stance on immigration, is putting it quite politely. This is Matteo Salvini, who actually is from the Immigration League Party. He's anti-immigration. He's from the League Party. And this is him earlier on in August visiting a centre where migrants are and saying that this is not acceptable, but for a very different reason from the reason that we're talking about. Here he is.
I have seen scenes here with children who should be elsewhere, pregnant women who should be elsewhere, young men who should be treated differently. This is not the civilized country I would like my children to grow up in. The goal of the future government, if Italians choose the League Party, the centre-right, is to return to controlling and protecting the borders, to fully welcome those who are escaping from war, which is a minority of those in Italy, and come back to border protection.
Nicholas, what do you do with that political situation? As Alessandro says, it's not just Italy. There is a change in attitude to migrants, to refugees now in Europe. What do you make of that? How do we get past that? Is that possible?
That's a good question. I think in order to get past that, we need to understand that that this is a question of human rights. People that choose to come to Europe to go through what they go through have a right to request asylum. This is safeguarded by the European legislation. It's not just the Greek legislation. It's not just one country, as Alessandro put it. This is not an issue for Italy or for Greece. This is an issue that has to be dealt collectively. And right now, it isn't being dealt collectively as such. This is European Union stepping in and saying that, okay, these people that arrive to my borders have to be respected. So we, as MSF, call for any investigation of violations, right? We know very well what migration means as Europeans, right? So we can understand the need of people to wish to apply for international protection. And we should guarantee a safe passage so that this is not being done through the informal channels of the traffickers.
Earlier we spoke to Mattia, who works with Sea-Watch, which is an organisation that also helps with rescues of migrants at sea who are in distress. This is what she told us.
Sea-Watch has been active in the Central Mediterranean Sea for years and is also monitoring what is happening with our airplanes. In the last months, we have seen that the number of people trying to reach European land actually has been rising. But we also saw that the number of people who drowned or who gone missing rose up to over 1,000 people alone this year. Civil ships can do the best they can, but they do not receive any governmental support. If they ask to disembark the people in a port of safety, they have to wait for days and days. It cannot be the job of civil society alone. States must finally again engage in search and rescue activities. This is why we demand a state-led search and rescue operation in the Central Mediterranean Sea.
So this is really fascinating, Molly, because you have reported on the Ukraine refugee crisis and then the Mediterranean migrant crisis. Compare and contrast very briefly. What would you say is the difference?
I mean, you know, I'm not going to get into the sort of wider political points or maybe some of those reasons as to why there are differences. People, yeah. I'm sure, can make their own minds up on that. But there are certainly undoubtable sort of factual differences in terms of the treatment. So here in the UK, you know, where I'm based and focus much of my reporting, there's a designated scheme for people fleeing the conflict in Ukraine to be housed with Britons and stay with them for 6 months. This is all government led. So there's really been a sort of open arms policy from the UK government with regards to Ukraine, and lots of refugee organisations and humanitarian groups that I've interviewed have expressed, I guess, some confusion and concern about why a similar scheme couldn't be open to people from other countries. And there's other things like when you are applying to reach the UK from Ukraine, you can make those applications within the country that you're in. So people know before they have to cross whether they have a visa and we will be able to come to the UK through official channels. If you want to seek asylum in the UK, you have to do that on UK soil. So right. That's one of the reasons that people think that these crossings are happening, because you actually have to make those crossings and make that journey before you can pitch an asylum claim.
Right.
So there are certainly differences that we are seeing in terms of a policy approach. And I think also more publicly, there's a real lack of understanding, I think. And I have to say, you know, even as someone who works in this area, what's going on in the Mediterranean is something that even I did not know a huge amount about, in a way that everybody, you know, is well aware of what's going on in Ukraine. And it's hugely important and valuable. But you do see a discrepancy in public knowledge.
Sure. And Molly, I just brought that up because our online community right now, we're mentioning that difference between Ukraine refugees and then people trying to cross the Mediterranean. One more voice I want to include very briefly into our conversation, and this is Maurice, who spoke to us just a few hours ago. This is the point that he wanted to make and say that we need actual government policy. Let's have a look.
You have to end its draconian pushback policies, whereby migrants are being obstructed from reaching EU territory, often violently, in the case of Greece. And finally, you have to launch a wide-scale rescue operation. It's absolutely shameful that this European community is unable to do what NGOs and activists are doing already for years.
We asked the European Commission for their contribution to this discussion, and particularly for this show. This is what they sent us and shared with us. I'm going to pick out the bit that really jumped out at me. The new pact on migration and asylum put forward by the EU Commission includes a proposal for a coordinated approach to search and rescue. I do not know how long that bureaucracy is going to take, but I hope it won't take long. Thank you so much to Molly, Nicholas and Alessandro for helping us understand the Mediterranean migrant crossings that are upticking right now across the Mediterranean. Thanks for being part of our show, and to all of you on YouTube who commented and asked your questions. I'll see you next time. Take care, everybody.